You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking to James Gortner, lives in New York, and he's talking to me from his studio at Manna in Jersey. No, not Jersey. Where is it? Thanks for talking with
me,
James.
It's in Jersey City. Yeah. Hey, thank you for having me.
Jersey City. Great. So tell me, what are you working on now? I mean, just to get right into the work, and I want to talk about Manna and the whole context, but what's happening in your studio now? What are you working on?
Right. Well, right at this moment, it's kind of a action-packed moment. Speaking of Manna, I'm actually moving studios, so I'm going to a different studio, and I've worked at this studio now for a year and a half, and I have like this sort of paint buildup on the floor, as a lot of artists do, especially painters, kind of get this like mosaic of a floor, you know, becomes like a piece, and that's how I'm thinking of it. And I'm kind of got the mindset to take it with me. So right now I'm doing this work that took some experimenting to figure out, but I'm actually taking the floor off, a top veneer layer of it, taking like the enamel and the paint that I've dropped and reversing it onto canvas. And thinking about that.
Well, that's pretty interesting. That is a pretty interesting project. Now you're removing. is it on plywood? That's like you're removing a veneer of plywood, or are you leaving the wood?
It's the studio floor is different. It's kind of unique at Manna. There's not really many. There's mostly cement floors, but this studio, for some reason, when it was a factory. This would be a tobacco factory, and they needed wood on the floor in this area. So I have it's a kind of traditional oak wood floor with the, you know, with the two and a quarter inch slats, you know, the sort of thing you think of when you think of an artist atelier or whatever. It's got this buildup of enamel, like a certain grays that they've put over it. Over the years, you know, and then there's all the paint that I've dropped on it in big splatters and sections. And,
right, so layers. There's layers of like industrial kind of floor paint.
Yeah. There's full on layers of, and there's kind of a lot of history there. So when I'm pulling it up, I'm actually getting a lot of pieces. I'm getting like a tiniest shred of wood on there too. So it's kind of interesting because it ends up being, you know, something like reclaimed wood and enamel and paint on linen, you know, which is a funny thing to read and then see. And then you see this thing, it looks like it looks like wood, you know, and paint. It looks like old paint and wood on canvas sometimes.
And then you mount that to a canvas? You pick up the whole thing and it's somehow adhered to the canvas? Or how does, what's the next step?
Yeah, it's a tricky little process that it took a little while to figure out, but it's linking to the canvas, and then what you're seeing is the reverse side of the paint, and anything that's, you know, weak enough like to be pulled off the floor basically, and stays pretty flat, but you can actually see the grooves of, you know, the little in the cracks between the wood. And,
so wait a minute.
Kind of
so
like
let me understand. So actually, we're seeing the reverse side. So you're flipping it over. We're not seeing what we'd see if we stood on your floor and looked down.
Exactly.
Then that's being flipped upside down, and we're seeing like the mold of the floor, like you're saying, and then patterns of the floor as well as the
It's a randomized cross section almost of the underside of the floor. Cause, yeah, I mean, it's not like a clean layer. It's like breaking off different layers at different places, and you're seeing this thing. It looks. This is great that we're talking about visual art, but, you know, we're not looking at it, but the interesting thing, it looks a little bit, because of the stripes, you know, it's got this like wood stripes, it kind of looks a little bit like Stella or something, and it's all, and it's a industrial uniform too, kind of like he was with the brushes, and, you know, it's, you know, 2 1/4 inch stripes throughout, and then there's this organic material, which is like pieces of wood that looks like something else, and then it kind of looks almost like, because it's so... There's air bubble gaps and all kinds of things. Looks kind of like Gerhard Richter. It's like, but it's, in the end, it's its own some mess, you know, and it's my studio
So how much
from
paint
the
did
reverse
you
side.
Drop? Like the paint that you're dropping, is that also like floor paint, gesso, kind of household or industrial paints, or is it also like what's coming from the canvas? Those are paints
yeah.
right out of the tube, or like why are they hitting the floor, that much paint? There's a ton of paint on the floor.
Well, I have a ton of paint on the floor. I've been making these abstract paintings out of other people's paintings, which is kind of the overall theme, which is like in my work, it seems to be I'm working a lot with paint that already exists and paint that's already put down by other people in some way. So like I'm taking two found paintings, and I have been for a while, and that's why there's a lot of paint on the floor. I'm gluing them together with paint, and to answer your question, it's found paint as well. This is in liquid form. It hasn't dried yet. It's repurposed paint. So, like, if supers, you know, in New York have, like, tons of industrial paint in their cellars that they would have to pay to dispose of, and I collect that, and I go to art schools when the semester is up, and I collect that paint, too. And so I end up with a lot of repurposed paint and reclaimed paint in liquid form that's kind of just like bound for destruction or whatever, and then take that and I glue two paintings together, and then when it dries a little while later, I'll rip them apart and the two paintings will kind of fight, and you know, the stronger paint and the, you know, will stay connected to one canvas, and the, you know, the weaker areas will break off. It ends up looking pretty interesting. You know, you wouldn't necessarily know that happened.
But well, they're yeah. all almost printmaking processes in a way, too, the way there's that surprise in printmaking, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, and then also, you know, like, the surprise when you do, like an action painting or something, it's kind of like you're going, you know, and then it's almost like a visual map of the physics of what was happening with the paint, you know? And with the actions taking place. And sometimes you can try to control that, you know, like Pollock was trying to like move those wands of paint where he wanted them, but you know, the splicker and splatter was also partly randomized. So yeah.
That's interesting. And so with these, yeah, but it is. It's true. It's radio, and we're talking about visual art. That's always kind of the irony of this show. But I think everybody can kind of see what's happening now.
Yeah.
So when you put that back on the canvas, are you also adding to that? Like, will there be more layers that you're bringing to it after the floor is peeled up and reversed and mounted?
With the floor series, I'm just kind of collecting the floor, and it's really coming out complete. I mean, I can, you know, the things I can control is I can, you know, I tape off a section of floor that I like and the size I like, and I kind of look at the pattern of the floor striping and the knots in the floor and the imperfections, the big gashes, the all the kinds of things that are going on there, and I kind of try to wing a composition, you know, based on what I see on the top, and you know, then I can control the color of the paint. Usually right now I'm kind of using a lot of black, and I'm also mixing together a lot of colors and ending up with a gray or something like that. So it's kind of like a repurposed sort of mishmash of colors. And then when I pull it up, there's those gaps that you can see the color that I apply. So there's some things that I can control. And there's also the depth of the pull too. You know, it's like I'm learning now to control how much paint I want to stick on. You know, if I want a lot of stick paint to stick on there and wood floored, if I pull it off, it looks like a faux. It looks like a chunk when I stretch it. It looks like a chunk of floor. You know, somebody came in the studio the other day and was like, "Where did you get that section of floor?" And it's really boxy. It's wrapped around a frame, stretched. You know, it's got about the appropriate width to be like a sawed-out piece of floor or something. And
it's
then
really
other times,
sculptural. That it has a kind of a sculptural presence, maybe in even more
yeah.
so than previous works of yours.
Yeah, sure. Well, actually, you know, there's been that motif of the sculpturality because there's always that conversation of like painting as an object too. You know, you have like that people are having, you know, and where you're thinking of
well, kind
of
like Rauschenberg
object
combine,
that
kind of thing.
Yeah,
meaning,
so
like, adding
things, combining, yeah. But strictly paintings, you know. So instead of like you know, a bird being in there, there's like just a bunch of paintings, you know, and then screwing those together in the past and building this like larger painting out of paintings stays relatively 2D, but if you look closely, you see where the cracks are butted together, and you see the, you know, the outside edge where you can see other paintings, and there's a subframe in the back that's engineered so that different thicknesses of paintings can actually be accommodated, and the whole thing looks flat on the front, but solidly one piece. So it's definitely an object, you know, and that wasn't necessarily intentional. It's just how I wanted to make a painting, and then, you know, reflecting back on it, thinking like, "Well, this is like a thing. It's really a thing here," you know.
Right.
An
right.
Object. Exactly. Well, exactly. The conversation of a painting as object. You know, you're thinking about the screws, the staples, the wood, the structures, and the things coming together. Although it's all material that would be in a painting. Several paintings together, so it's hard to not think of it as a sculpture.
So, and where will this go? And I mean, will there be an exhibit or soon of your work or this work? Are you represented by a gallery?
Yeah, I have a gallery in New York called Lyons Weir Gallery on 24th Street, and they're right at street level, so it's kind of a really fun place to have a show, and they're really great people, and had a show there across the street from Jeff Koons in 2013, which was super fun. Just to be on that, you know, be on that street. There's so many great artists showing there and doing their thing. And then I have recently a new rep in Connecticut, actually. So up by you guys, and I'll have a show with them in the fall, September.
That's a gallery. That's a gallery in Connecticut.
Yeah, Fernando Luis Alvarez Gallery. And they're in Stanford. And
great. And do you also teach or do other work? What else do you do?
Yeah, well, I taught a little bit at Columbia after my master's, and then I went to the studio. I stopped doing that, and then I went to the studio, and I kind of, you know, because I wanted to get kind of back to work, I get really focused on, you know, doing one thing, and I can get into it. But in the, I had a hard time balancing the, you know, the work and the being a teacher. And then I thought, you know, well, there's so many, I've got like some years left till I have even more to contribute as a teacher. So maybe I can get back to that later. So I got back in the studio, and then I kind of missed teaching. So what I did was, and I needed a lot of help around the studio. So I developed a program for younger artists to be able to work with me. At the same time, I teach them things. So it could be like technical instruction on materials, and whether it be like the way that materials work together, or realistic painting, or switching gears entirely and talking to them about what I know about a career path for an artist, and specifically, you know, their strengths and weaknesses as an artist, and you know, it's kind of like a little mini art school that I do here.
And you're still doing that now?
Yeah, I took a break from it for the moment because I was developing this new work, and I had my solo show at in fall at Lyons Weir,
and it did well. So I mean, but in short, you're able to just focus on painting now. You're painting full time.
Yeah, that show did really well, and I only have one piece left over from that show, and it's great to have it, and it's great to have the ability to be in my studio kind of constantly and be working, and so I just took the moment to switch gears and take a minute to myself, and kind of like the first time I stopped teaching, and then I'll think about maybe getting back into that program you know, some months from now. But
so this is this new body of work that you're building, which, you know, sounds really cool. What was the Can you just tell us, like, the first time you kind of began working this way? I know that it probably goes pretty far back, but the kind of first work that you made that was combining and just kind of looking even at making work this way. What was that first work?
Yeah, the first work was kind of like it was taking these found things, and they were mostly flat. You know, early 2000s, something like that. Taking street signs, like kind of clipping them off, kind of like graffiti-esque or whatever, but in reverse, taking a really graffitied up street sign and bringing it inside the studio and putting that next to a found painting, and then putting some other object that's kind of flat next to a found painting, and then having these big science projects occur. And then, you know, realizing how similar that is to a Rauschenberg. At some point, you know. Maybe even, you know, before I even had any sort of art education on, you know, who that was. Seeing his work and thinking, wow, this is really amazing. But that's kind of covered. And then at the same time, when I was putting together just the paintings and looking at it, I remember looking with a friend at some silly paintings, actually, that we put together. And we just were laughing, you know, at this construction of paintings that were just so bizarre, but they were, when they were together, they were having this sort of conversation. You know, there's this guy with a feather cap, and then there's this, like, you know, badly painted Sphinx person, you know, thing next to it, and then there's like a picture of an apple or something, and you know, and it's constructed together, and it's talking to itself, and it was kind of, you know, meant something. The first one was kind of silly, but then it kind of turned into this. It turned into the thing I wanted to pursue. It was just like the constructions that became all about painting. And to keep the paint as sort of found paint, and rework things quite a bit, process them, and usually put a figure on. So in the past, I put figures on top of these constructions of work, so that they kind of act as these, like, they're like these narrators or like central, you know, characters in this allegory.
Right, they create a kind of narrative. They add largely to the sense that there is a narrative happening.
Yeah, yeah. There's almost like there's like this open brain happening around them, open environment happening around them. I did this project. I did that for the first time when I was working in a place called Darkside in East Bushwick years ago, and I took up residency inside of a derelict old building in a cemetery, and painted the people that would come through there, and usually ended up, you know, these quite powerful allegories kind of just occurred, you know, and that was kind of the birth of putting the figure into that thing.
And now you're ripping up the floor. That draws a line to kind of where you are now, in a sense. That was the beginning of that process, you're saying, that then evolved into what's, you know, even more abstract now.
Yeah, yeah. So to make it a long story short, yeah, it was like the idea of just putting paintings together, and then what I could do with that, and what that meant, you know, it was, it kind of felt like, you know, a huge collaboration of energy and forces, which is kind of like, you know, what we are, you know, we're these products of like major chance and major circumstance, and we, you know, spin through the world and we get created and we die, and other things are created out of the material that used to be us. And it sort of becomes pretty allegoric of what's really going on with, you know, in the universe with living, you know, and how, and that, how things are not just created, they're kind of, they evolve, you know, they transform. Things don't start and stop so linearly, you know, things turn into other things. And I think that sometimes the artist's egos can kind of get in front of, you know, when we had modernism, you know, even since, you know, sometimes it's the idea that we created something, all ourselves, you know. So we have, but the truth is really that so many other factors are involved when we make something, that it's really a stretch almost to say that we made it, you know. So even if you're, what I mean to say is, even if you're alone in your studio and you're painting, you pull out some red paint, that paint was made by other people and had, you know, research and engineering and all kinds of things that went into that for some hundreds of years, that oil paint. And then, you know, the Winsor Newton Company and all the people that worked there. And so you're just kind of putting the miners that got the coal, the pigments out of the ground. You can go back and back and back into the natural history of it, and all that material that, you know, spurs off of the periodic table as part of the universe, just kind of coming together. And it's really wild that we can be like, that's mine, you know. And that's kind of a reflection of capitalism, really. You know, and that's just the system we live under, and that's the system, you know, and that's the way that the brain kind of works, you know, in order to survive.
You mean the sense of this capitalist, in the sense of ownership over things that you didn't even create, this kind of consuming and co-opting of everything that's
sort of consumable? Absolutely. Yeah. And the whole idea of, you know, and advertising plays into that, you know, idea of like, you know, and culture plays into the idea of like, you can do this all yourself and you can have all this and you did it, you know, by yourself, you know, and in other cultures and other times, you know, we've been more in touch maybe with the idea that we do things together, you know, and we do things because of other things, and we're gathering. Even the ideas we have are reformulations of empirical data that we collect and we sort of roll through our lives and repurpose, you know, I guess.
Right. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that sometimes, I mean, it sounds really odd to people at times, you know, because everything that, you know, we have these ideas, you know, in science, you know, we have the idea that we can't actually make matter. You know what I mean? We can't create, no matter is created from non-matter. Everything is made from something else. So we know in science that this is true, but for some reason in art, I think that the ego maybe gets in the way and like says like, I made this, and then the collector goes, sees it, and it's like, wow, that looks like something, you know, that I can relate to. That's mine, and they collect it, you know, and they transfer the transaction, they pay money, and they get that thing, you know, and it's theirs, and it's in their possession at that moment, it's kind of like and they might, you know, feel more in tune to that piece because that artist was doing it all themselves, you know, and they feel like they do everything all themselves, and there's this whole like egoic wrap up in the capitalism of making art that I think we actually comes full circle to make, and the artists are, you know, maybe it's just a consciousness thing, you know, people don't really notice a lot of times that they're actually, you know, that they're actually thinking that they're doing something totally themselves, and there's all these other factors and people that are helping them and reasons that they're even in that place at all, you know.
Yeah, and that says such a, that's so That's so interesting, and also how that relates, of course, to everything we've been talking about in your work. James, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been great, and especially those last thoughts, really, really interesting. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Hey, thanks, Brandon. Thanks for calling me up.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.